Hello, this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 17th of October. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Tom Williams. And your readers today are Michael Wyard.
Hello.
Maria Head.
Hello.
And Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
And first of all, I must apologise for my voice. I had hoped that my cold would be over by this time, but it's still hanging on. I hope it's not too nasty for you. And so we go on to the main... the main headlines this week, which are Chinese students, £17 million boost to local economy, hostile meeting rails against new homes, and tensions rise again on student estate. So can we go for the first story behind the headline, please, Michael?
Right, Chinese students, this is the one about the £17 million boost to the local economy. And the amazing news that the art school numbers go up from 5 to 500 in just 10 years. The number of Chinese students studying at Winchester School of Art has soared from a handful to nearly 600 a year in less than 10 years, the Hampshire Chronicle can reveal. The number of registered students from the People's Republic of China has risen from 5 in 2005-06 to 575 last December. The rocketing figures reflect the growing links between Southampton University, which runs the Winchester-based school, and various universities in China, the East Asian economic superpower. The influx is bringing a huge economic boost to Winchester and Hampshire as the students live, shop and spend leisure time in the city. Each student pays up to around £14,000 a year for tuition fees and with living costs is spending around £30,000, producing an economic boost for the local economy of around £17 million a year. NHUT Lack, that's not initials, that's a person's name, Newt Lack, owner of Chinatown, the Oriental supermarket in Upper Brook Street, said his sales double when the students arrive each September. The economy here depends on students. They bring a lot of money here. It's not just me. I can see a big change in the city. I can see there are a lot of opportunities with students. Maybe next year I will open a club because there's big money in it. There are many opportunities to make money, not to rip them off, but to make their lives more comfortable. They don't know where to go. But there are some concerns in Winchester about the interaction between the students and local people. John Holder, who is proprietor of a bed and breakfast in Colebrook Place, said, "I wonder if the Chinese students get the full value of being in Winchester that they could have. There are a lot of Chinese students who don't seem to get a good deal of contact with the people of Winchester." Mr. Holder added, "It's like two different worlds. I fear by the time they go home, they have learned very little about our customs and way of life. Some of them work as volunteers in Oxfam, though, which is wonderful. I think the university should try and organise events. All of a sudden, we have a new community. But there's been very little hospitality or welcome. Having these students here could be of great benefit to our country, to have people going back as ambassadors. But we aren't helping them to be that. We could be doing more for the students." In a statement, the university said, "Winchester School of Art is a leading art school with an international reputation, attracting students from the UK and around the world. It welcomes many students from China and East Asia each year, as well as other countries. On improving contact with the local people," the university added, The university organises a series of events to welcome international students to Southampton and the UK, which help them experience and understand British culture, including providing support for English language and study skills. The Student Union runs pre-sessional activities such as trips and events to help new students experience life in the UK.
Hostile meeting rails against new homes. People at a crowded meeting attacked a housing developer's plans for a village near Winchester. Some 40 people gathered to hear a developer's vision for up to 50 homes, mostly affordable, on the edge of Kingsworthy. One resident said, "We don't need more affordable homes. There are already three in the village that are empty." At times, villagers shouted at Neil Holmes of Drew Smith Limited, which has submitted an outline application for land off Hookpit Farm Lane, known as Topfield. Mr. Holmes gave a presentation to the hostile crowd, who raised concerns about intrusion on the skyline, open space, parking, traffic, flooding, and school places. Mr. Holmes said there are two options, 25 or 50 homes, and it is up to the City Council to decide which it prefers. "We have been working on this for some time," he told the meeting. "These plans are just illustrative at the moment for up to 50 dwellings on Topfield, with the potential for 7 on Dildawn." He also said the 50 dwelling option has access to Springvale Road. "We did that because people on Hookpit raised concerns about the Tesco Junction." "We are listening to your concerns," he added. However, members of the Topfield Action Group said they do not want to see any building on the field. Sandy Evans, the group secretary, said, "We want to keep the field as an open space. It has been used by people for years for dog walking and various recreations, and we want it to remain that way. It is the last remaining open space in Kingsworthy." There's a Village Green application waiting approval by Hampshire County Council. If it's agreed, they won't be able to build on it anyway. Mr. Holmes said, "If it goes ahead, the site would provide 70% affordable homes, 11.6 acres of public open space and 3.7 acres of public amenity space along the disused railway." City Councillor Ian Tate, portfolio holder for housing services, said he thinks the scheme could help with the city's housing crisis. "What Drew Smith is offering is more than the required 40% affordable housing," he said. "We have a shortage of affordable housing, and Kingsworthy is a sustainable location, so delivering that in Kingsworthy is something that is good for the district." He also said the council is strongly reliant on parish councils and residents' comments to make decisions about the local plan. The public consultation for Local Plan Part 2 opens on October the 24th. Earlier this year, Kingsworthy Parish Council voted to support building on land off Loveden Lane. It comes as part of Winchester City Council's Local Plan Part 2, which requires 250 homes to be built in Kingsworthy by 2031.
Tensions rise again on student estate. Stanmore could face an all-out war between residents and students as tensions brew over partying and antisocial behaviour, a petitioner warned. Residents are calling for immediate restrictions on houses in multiple occupation, which are referred to as HMOs, to prevent further studentification of the estate, which has seen major demographic changes as Winchester University takes on more freshers. The petition, which has almost 150 signatures, said Stanmore is at breaking point, with late parties keeping children awake, antisocial behaviour, parking, litter, and inflation of house prices by investors converting family homes into HMOs for students. William Gledhill, a former solicitor of Green Jacket Close, said, "It's absolutely horrendous. It's like being back in Northern Ireland. The animosity is building year on year. They don't care about the residents that live here at all." Petition creator Amanda Chard of Drayton Street said, "It's not far off an all-out war between long-time residents who've been here for 15 and 20 years and students. I keep imagining the Simpsons when they're going around with the pitchforks." "Not everyone causes problems," she added, "but those who do often blame locals for moving into a student area." The university is planning a new campaign to inform students of their responsibilities in the community and the consequences of antisocial behaviour. In a statement, Winchester Student Union said, "We have had numerous complaints from our residential neighbours about nighttime noise and antisocial behaviour in the community. These complaints serve to bring the university into disrepute and jeopardise the student union's late-night licence. If you are caught engaged in late-night noise or antisocial behaviour in the community, both the student union and university will take decisive disciplinary action." The university spokesman offered no comment when asked what punishments were available, but Student Union President Naomi Carter told the Hampshire Chronicle that students could be barred from union premises or made to pick up litter. She said, "We do maintain a good relationship with our residents, but it seems that this year there's been particularly extreme issues." The university has accepted record number of students in each of the last 2 years without enough rooms to house some of them. Ms. Carter said, "The growing student population in private rented accommodation could explain the rising tensions. If there are more students around, the noise and whatnot can increase," she said. Stanmore councillor Jamie Scott said, "An anti-student campaign would be counterproductive," and called for positive engagements between groups. "This petition isn't going to change anything," he said. "There will still be a lot of students in Stanmore. We want to do some positive work in our community. Students will be playing a proactive role." Petitioners are calling on councillors to bring forward a proposed rule forcing landlords to get planning permission before converting houses into HMOs. The restriction is set to be introduced with the city's local plan part 2 in the summer of 2016.
Here are the death notices, just 5 this week. Adams, Beatrice Millicent Adams, at Abbots Barton Nursing Home, aged 92. Howe, Barry Lawrence Howe, in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital after a short illness, aged 77. James, Mavis Jean James, at Brendan Care, Otterbourne, aged 95. Waters, Mark Waters, sadly passed away in Mallorca after a short illness, aged 53. And Wally, Mildred Wally, at Moorside Nursing Home, aged 89. And could we please have Christian comment, Deborah?
Yes, this week it's offered by Roland Ream, and he's entitled it, "What Makes a Genuine Leader?" Last Friday, we buried the former Bishop of Winchester, Michael Scott Joint. He'd been a bishop in Hampshire for 16 years, longer than any other bishop in recent history. I myself had every reason to be grateful to him, not just because he appointed me to the cathedral, but because he was persistently kind and loving to my family till his very last days. The tributes given at his funeral made fond mention of a few idiosyncrasies. Bishop Michael was described as the admiral on the bridge with a screwdriver in his hand. His command of small detail was legendary. He He read all his paperwork for meetings, and sometimes his screwdriver reached a surprisingly long way into local church life. Bishop Michael also held firm views on subjects where popular opinions had rapidly changed over the years, on marriage and sexuality. These did not always make him popular, even with some of his fellow bishops, but he held to the truth as he understood it. He was a man of integrity. His daughter told us that at home, too, he always gave his children respect and love when he and they disagreed. Every period of history throws up challenges for leaders. We're not just at the moment at war or facing national catastrophe, but figures of authority are distrusted. Even celebrities are now under suspicion. Modern communications both squeeze the margin between public and private life and give many people with extreme views an instant platform. Bishop Michael, despite being 6'7", was certainly not charismatic. He was, though, a man deeply committed to his beliefs, to living them out and working tirelessly to encourage others across the world to do the same. He worked for the church to be a real influence for good, whether in the United Kingdom, Africa, or Burma, where he saw much vitality and hope for the future. A combination of consideration and determination made Bishop Michael a genuine leader. His intelligence and his faith stood behind his actions and gave him stature. What clinched his authority, though, was the sense that everything he attempted as a bishop was done with genuine care for the good of others. At his funeral, Bishop Michael's coffin was dressed with a simple shepherd's pastoral staff. It spoke eloquently of someone who spent his best energies and most careful attention on his flock.
Now we have letters to the editor, and the first letter's read by Michael.
This comes from Judith Martin of Romsey Road, and it's headed, "A Free for All is Not the Answer." "Sir, build on green fields," says Councillor Chris Pines, "as is the only way to get affordable housing." This was quoted in the Chronicle of October the 2nd. "There are some areas that might be built on, as architect Paul Bulkley suggests, but a free-for-all is not the answer. The answer is to make sure developers such as Henderson's at Silver Hill don't throw sand in the eyes of councillors to get out of their legal obligations. Chilbolton Avenue has been allowed to be developed piecemeal, with no affordable housing on most sites, because the City Council wouldn't agree to a master plan for the area. As for the 40% affordable housing at Barton Farm, I believe it when I see it. Ditto Pitt Manor and everywhere else. After all, 35% affordable was promised at Silver Hill and formed a major part of the compulsory purchase order consent. Only after getting the compulsory purchase order consent did Henderson say, despite a market that rises by the week, that the scheme would be unviable if they had to provide it. Henderson's own in-house documentation says that they got the site for a highly advantageous price. If Henderson did walk away from Silver Hill because Councillor Pines and his colleagues insisted on them honouring their agreement, Winchester would be left as the owner of a huge chunk of land that could then be developed organically for real social benefit. The city would lose a huge amount of retail space and some very exclusive housing. Not everyone would say that was a bad thing." Judith Martin.
This letter from Miranda Johnson also concerns the Silver Hill development and the need for a public open space there. "Sir, this summer I spent several days in Salisbury, and the comparison of Winchester with that city is shaming. Their beautiful market square was laid out centuries ago, and Winchester can never compete with that, but a modern equivalent would do so much for the city, its visitors, and the people like me who live here. Whenever Winchester puts on its great set-piece events, like the Christmas market, these have to be squeezed into uncomfortable corners, something the Silver Hill development could address greatly to the benefit of the city. However, this aspect seems to have been ignored. With regard to the retail proposals, the Brooks, also a city council plan, is a hopeless failure. Half empty, unvisited and unloved. What makes the council so sure this won't happen to Silver Hill? It will, because the city centre is just too small to absorb the traffic of cars and pedestrians. Miranda Johnson, Austin Close, Winchester.
And the next letter is from Peter Rees. Develop brownfield sites first. Sir, National Labour Party policy on the development of affordable housing is absolutely clear, endorsed recently at the Labour Party conference. The first priority is to develop all identified brownfield sites. The suggestion that the provision of affordable housing in Winchester, locating social housing sites on the edge of the city, is completely incompatible with this policy. The head of strategic planning is also clear that this type of provision is not needed. If this ridiculous back-of-the-envelope proposal were needed, it would result in the creation of satellite ghettos for ordinary working people on the council waiting list. There are sufficient brownfield sites available within the normal Winchester boundary, but of course, most of these are purchased with specific encouragement of the Tory administration to enable developers to make substantial profits at the expense of the homeless and those long on the waiting list. For Henderson's, with their £15 million profit, to say that they have to exclude 100 affordable homes in Silver Hill or the scheme is unaffordable demonstrates how ineffectual the City Council has been in defending the right of those without homes. Silver Hill is a bastion of capitalism and an affront to those who have no proper home. The council has no long-term viable policy or a vision for the provision of affordable homes in good quantities, constantly encouraging just private development. The current situation is a shambles and a moral disgrace. Peter Rees, Chairman of Winchester Labour Party, Monarch Way, Winchester.
The next letter comes from Phil Farminer, who is a representative of the Drew Smith Group. And he titles his letter, A Right to Submit Housing Plans. Sir, it is generous to compare the Scottish referendum, where more than 80% of the electorate voted, with the Kingsworthy site allocation process, where less than 4% returned questionnaires. Of this low-level response, a close majority voted to build 30 houses on unused farmland. What they did not do, because it was not disclosed in any presentation, was vote to build an additional 20 houses on a football pitch at Eversley Park, which now forms part of the proposal. Completely contrary to a democratic process, I consider the proposed site is none of those exhibited and carries no public mandate. All of this has to go in front of a planning inspector to be examined in detail before it can be adopted. And none of this takes away an individual's or company's right to make a planning application. And that was from Phil Farminger, Drew Smith Group.
And this letter from Maggie Taylor also concerns the need for an open space and underground parking. And it's titled, Even Belgium Can Sort Out Its Parking. Sir, recently David Cameron used the phrase, even Belgium, to encourage British exports to India. Could we in Winchester think about even Belgium in the context of parking? In Belgium, historic cities such as Bruges, Ghent and Namur make extensive use of underground parking, placing them under squares and roadways. Could we in Winchester use this approach for the parking area between Middle and Lower Brook Street? Wouldn't a square that is a real public space that could be utilised, for example, for the range of markets that we now have and the hat fair be preferable to the suggestion of a multi-storey car park located in this space? It does seem to me that there will be more demand for parking with the expected increased footfall and the decrease in spaces provided by Silver Hill. Please can we have a positive outcome, not a piecemeal development which will be above ground, because it will be presumably the quickest and cheapest option. I appreciate the underground may be more expensive, but why can Belgium take this route? And they build underground car parks near rivers and canals too. Maggie Taylor, Christchurch Road, Winchester.
And the next letter is entitled Enforce the Limit for Safety Reasons. Sir, re the letter lower limit doesn't help pollution levels in October the 9th. I congratulate Mr. Lilly on striving to achieve the new 20 mile an hour limit and understand his issue. But as a resident living on North Walls, it should be seen in the safety context as well. At the previous limit of 30, I suggest that off-peak, the average speed going downhill from the Jury Street traffic lights was nearer 40 on entry to the reduced width past the old Winchester Library, and where the narrow pavement hardly allows for two pedestrians to pass. It is slightly lower now, but nowhere near the new limit of 20. For safety reasons alone, it should be enforced before the inevitable accident happens, not wait until after. Pedestrians walking in this area have to be very careful, as motorists need to be too. One visible speed camera would do the trick. Alternatively, as enforcement of illegal mobile phone usage is thankfully now regularly undertaken in this area, just add this to the duties. And that was from John Cooper of North Walls, Winchester.
Another letter about the 20-mile limit is, and it's titled, 20 limit is nonsense for main roads. Sir, 20 miles per hour is a good maximum speed for residential streets, which are full of passive driving hazards, such as densely parked cars and playing children. It's also good for narrow roads with sharp bends, such as the top of St James's Lane. However, it is nonsense to apply exactly the same speed limit on main road through routes such as North Walls. This does not have any parked cars, is a main regional east-west route, and by definition, such a cut in speed cuts the capacity of the road by up to 33%, as it takes that much longer to cover the distance. Just what the city of Winchester does not need. The emphasis for the council and individual drivers alike should be to improve people's driving. For example, by taking the Driver and Vehicle Standards Agency Pass Plus training, or the Institute of Advanced Motorist Advanced Driving Test. In many cases, the passing of these tests would lead to cheaper car insurance. Winners all round. Chris Young from Eastleigh.
And this letter by Steve Harborne continues with the building theme. An affront to the democratic process. Sir, whilst Winchester County Council's Cabinet finds it acceptable to dismiss residents' legitimate concerns over development proposals in the Local Plan Part 2 as questions of detail, and to assert that they have only so far been discussing principles, letters October the 2nd. The suggestion that no plans have been made yet beggars belief. The latest development assessment by consultants, Tibbalds, provides helpful details as well as many examples of the kind of principles deemed appropriate. For example, the principle that supports building a six-storey office block directly opposite and within approximately 30 metres of two-storey flint and stone cottages within a conservation area. The principle, which allows for the needs of a local employer for expanded modern office space, to be such a key driver for any potential development, and for this to outweigh the needs of other landowners, i.e. local residents. These principles that are being used to justify the building of offices on the cattle market site are supported by somewhat desperate and unconvincing arguments. How is it that the planning department is currently struggling to provide office space with good broadband, when in my own Victorian house, a 50 megabyte fast broadband connection is easily available? As with other controversial plans, the real principle governing council development plans seems to be, we own the land, we can do what we like with it, and this is an affront to the democratic process. Steve Harborne, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
And the next letter is on the subject of dustbin emptying. Sir, last Thursday I heard the recyclable removal van come between 7 and 7.30 in the morning. Later I noticed that they hadn't collected from the three large containers which serve the flats here. The bins were extremely overloaded because someone had recently moved in. I thought the bins would be emptied later. This didn't happen, and I was unable to ring the office on Friday. When I rang on Saturday, I was told that nothing could be done until Monday. When I eventually rang on Monday morning, I was told I was too late to report it, as Winchester City Council had signed an agreement that non-collections cut-off time was noon the following day. I believe that everyone should be informed of this incredibly short cut-off time. People living in flats are particularly vulnerable as they come home late and go early the next day. Everyone should be informed of these decisions. What if this had been our household rubbish, which could have been left for a month? M. Calais, Silchester Place, Winchester.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836, emailing news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. From the files brings us the historical news, starting with 200 years ago.
200 years ago, October the 17th, 1814. Hampshire Music Festival, it is to our fortunate but difficult task to record the most prosperous proceedings of this grand festival of charity, this triumph of reason and feeling. It is impossible for us to do justice to this most splendid, sublime, exquisite, and in every way successful celebration. All that could gratify the best feelings of the heart and afford satisfaction to a correct taste were done upon that occasion. Such an entertainment certainly never before occurred in this county. His Royal Highness the Prince Regent has been pleased to confer the honour of knighthood on Neil Campbell, Esquire, Major in the 54th Regiment of Foot, and in order to evince the sense of His Royal Highness's entertained of the services of that officer at Martinique, Guadeloupe, Salamanca, etc., etc., to grant authority that he and his descendants may bear the honourable augmentation to the armorial ensigns of his family conferred upon him by the Emperor of Russia. The Prince Regent has also granted similar privileges unto the Honourable Alex Abercrombie, Lieutenant Colonel in the Coldstream Regiment of Guards.
And there are two items from 100 years ago, October the 17th, 1914. Sergeant F. Hunt, A Company, 1st Battalion Rifle Brigade, records his experiences in a letter to his relatives. On August the 25th, we halted at Briest, I do hope I've pronounced that correctly, where we dug trenches and two of our boys filled them at night. I shall never forget my first visions of shells bursting, and at night the actual burst is easily visible. Since that date, we have been shelled so much, the Germans have been shelled more and more effectively too, that we are getting quite accustomed to it now. And the second item, many cars are going to and from the station, and it would relieve the traffic if the new Chilbolton Avenue and Stockbridge Road were made more use of. On Sunday, a motor car conveying soldiers back to the Hursley camp caught fire in the Romsey Road and was completely burnt out. There were six or seven soldiers in the car, and the driver had pulled up to replenish the tank with petrol. The petrol, through some unaccountable reason, caught fire, and very speedily the car was ablaze, though not before the soldiers were able to get out and escape being burnt.
50 years ago, 1964, Conservatives hold on to Eastleigh. The Conservatives held the marginal seat of Eastleigh in Thursday's general election, although with a reduced majority. In a high poll of 84.5%, Mr. David Price had a margin of 2,088, with the Labour candidate in second place and the Liberals, in their first appearance in the constituency, gaining 13% of the votes cast. The significant feature of the election in Hampshire undoubtedly lies in the fact that the national swing to Labour of around 3.5% was fully reflected in the urban constituencies of Southampton and Portsmouth, but was negligible in the six county seats covering the wide sweep of rural Hampshire. And there's a second item. The proceeds of the Winchester Mayor's Ball, to be held in January next year, will be donated to the League of Friends of Winchester Hospitals. It was announced at the League's executive meeting in Winchester on Tuesday. There was some discussion as to what the money could be used for, and it was decided that it would go towards improving the George Osmond Geriatric Ward at St Paul's Hospital.
25 years ago, we have two entries here for October the 13th, 1989. The first one is headed, Royal Protocol Abandoned. Princess Anne abandoned royal protocol when she visited Hedge End and Sparsholt. First, VIPs were left standing and she spoke to gypsy children, and then dignitaries were trailed across an unmade path and field in an unscheduled walk. The break with rules came during a hectic day of official engagements in Hampshire. Having been delayed by hundreds of eager children at an earlier event in Portsmouth, the Princess Royal arrived 20 minutes late for the opening of Whitbread Brewery's new £10 million regional headquarters at Hedge End. And the second item talks about a dozen miles to starboard, two Sea Harrier jet fighters tumble across a leaden sky in a mock dogfight, their frantic manoeuvres tracked as ghostly green images on radar screens in the twilight world of the operations room. It's all in a day's work for HMS Invincible, and Captain Michael Gretton, the 43-year-old Hampshire man who commands her, the sixth ship of the Royal Navy to bear this famous name.
Now we have editorial comment followed by first person.
City's shop window to the world. Winchester School of Art's policy to grow overseas students is no different to many other learning institutions. What is unusual is its success in attracting a large number of students from China, and many other colleges and universities will be a little envious. The Park Avenue-based college, which is run by the University of Southampton, has seen its number of Chinese students leap from just 5 to nearly 600 in less than a decade. It reflects the growing links between Southampton University and various universities in the East Asian economic superpower. The influx is bringing a huge financial boost not only to the university, but to the local economy. The students' presence is opening up new business opportunities, and this is bound to grow in the future. The challenge is for all of Winchester to find ways of engaging with them on a social, cultural, and economic level. Many of these students will go back and spread the word of their positive experiences in Winchester. With China on course to overtake the US as the world's biggest economy in the next 20 years, in its own small way, Winchester is putting itself in the international shop window, and that can only be a positive thing.
Judith Hennigan writes, "A birthday is reason enough to party. Everyone seems to be celebrating their 50th birthdays this year. Oddly, my youngest daughter swears the whole world is turning 14, but I don't believe her. We're ignoring rumours that 21st birthdays are proliferating in Winchester's outer reaches. 50 it is, even when it's the new 30. And the fact that I too am approaching my half century is entirely coincidental. So, once again, I find myself standing in a shop wondering what card to buy, what gift to take to the party, what clothes to wear, and how indeed to behave. There are no guidelines, no appropriate playlists. In my head, I'm trapped somewhere between Stevie Nicks and Lady Gaga, with a penchant for grown-up wine and books, and decidedly ungrown-up fistfuls of Skittles and prawn cocktail-flavoured crisps. The most striking cards are, of course, the ones with 50 emblazoned across the front. Big, bold, bright, the number is what matters, and there's no forgetting it here. They seem a little lacking in imagination, though. The ones for 60 and 70 look much the same. I don't think that's what happens as we age. Next in the rack are hipster cards. Cool, retro, bit out of focus, like a 70s Polaroid, suggesting transience, a fleeting world, captured in a moment before it's gone forever. No, that won't do at all. There's no shortage of cards with jokes about drinking and ageing and ageing and drinking and not shifting from one's armchair. Wide of the mark or too close to home? Flowers. Definitely not flowers. Googly eyes and birthday badges? Maybe if I removed the naught from the big 5-0. Trouble is, they're all too blatant or too tasteful, too grown-up or too childish, or too glittery and reindeerish, except those ones are actually Christmas cards that went on sale at the end of September, and these days I need my glasses on to spot the difference. Time speeds up as we get older. Perhaps seasonal cards should be left on display for the full 12 months of the year, and then the hapless mid-lifers like me won't blink and miss them. The essayist, Alain de Botton, has said that by the time we're 50, we're definitely in the suburbs of mortality. I could always cross-stitch that little gem onto a sampler for my friend to hang in her downstairs loo, or wind everyone up with some Pollyanna-ish pearl about embracing the freedom that comes with advancing years. No, I like the fact that there are no rules for big birthdays, no definitive guidance on how to age. Stuff happens, and while we accumulate and process experience, most of us seem to feel much the same as we did when we were 18 or 19. That's reason enough to party. Happy birthday, Ruth.
Belgarum has three items this week. So what's the first one, Michael?
The first one is about this lovely model of Winchester, which was created by an architect, which I'll read about. Good to hear that the brilliant model of Winchester in Victorian times is again getting a public showing. The model of the city as it was on a sleepy Sunday morning in 1870 went on display yesterday, that's Wednesday, and will remain on view for a month. The model, created over 7 years by retired County Council planning officer Roger Brown, now aged 90, will be on show until Tuesday, November the 14th. Mr. Brown built the highly praised model 25 years ago. There have been repeated calls for it to go on permanent display, and it was shown for several months at the InTech Science Centre and has been displayed before in the Great Hall. And this letter, this piece, is accompanied by a coloured photograph showing what really is a fascinating model, which I visited and took a group of people to see a few years ago. It's well worth a look.
And the second item concerns the oldest hospital in the country, still digging into hospital's history. A unique archaeological dig near Winchester is set to run for another 2 years. A team from the University of Winchester, led by Dr. Simon Roffey, has been excavating the medieval leper hospital at No Man's Land off Alsford Road. It is thought to be the oldest hospital in the country. Dr. Roffey said this summer the diggers have been excavating the rest of the medieval infirmary, as well as extending slightly north to investigate a corridor from the infirmary leading to some latrines and rubbish pits. "Nothing too exciting, just lots of pots," said Dr. Roffey. Next May, the team plan to focus on the medieval chapel and southern cemetery. And there is a photo with this item of Simon Roffey and Dr. Phil Marta at the site in 2011. And it looks like a lovely day for excavating.
And the final piece is Council Leader Talks Air Pollution. With his back to a McDonald's advertising board, Winchester Council Leader Rob Humby answers questions on air pollution in the city centre with a BBC crew. And there is a photograph of that happening. The A board, which for years the council tried to ban from the streets, looks to be helping Councillor Humby as he defends the council's lack of success in dealing with the issue. The city centre is amongst the most chronically polluted spots in Hampshire, and it's right by Belgarham's office.
We have What's On now. And the first item, well, as you heard in Belgarham, the large model of Winchester, it's 15 feet in diameter, as it would have been in 1870, is being displayed in the Great Hall, Winchester, from Wednesday the 15th of October to Tuesday the 14th of November. The Great Hall is open daily from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. The model was built by Roger Brown after he retired as Chief Planning Officer with Hampshire County Council. It took 9 years to complete. I've been asked to specifically mention this because it's interesting to note that Roger himself is only partially sighted and is also a regular listener to Winchester Talking newspaper. So, Roger, I'm sure we're all going to have a look at your model. On Tuesday the 21st of October, the Friends of Winchester Cathedral annual lecture takes place in the cathedral nave at 7:30 p.m. when Joanna Lumley will be in conversation with John Miller. Tickets cost £10 for Friends and £15 for others and are obtainable from the cathedral box office, whose telephone number is 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. On Friday the 24th of October, at the Guildhall, Winchester, as part of the Winchester Dialogues, John Simpson, the renowned BBC reporter, will talk about the changing relationships between church and state. Tickets are £10 again from the cathedral box office. And that number again, I'll give it to you once more, is 01962 857 275. And there's a chance to hear different types of music at the Theatre Royal. On Friday the 24th at 8 p.m, you can hear Steely Span. And on Sunday the 26th, at 7:30 p.m. you can hear Sounds of the Glenn Miller Era. And the number for the Theatre Royal box office is 01962 840 440. Lighting Up Time ends today, Friday the 17th of October, at 7:32 a.m. and begins again at 6:09 p.m. On Wednesday the 22nd of October, it ends at 7:40 a.m. and begins at 5:59 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. And we continue with further items of general news. So, Michael, over to you for the first item.
This one is entitled Biddle to Open Hyde 900 Festival Event. The world's leading expert on the archaeology of Winchester will open this year's Hyde 900 King Alfred Weekend Festival with a lecture on King Canute. Professor Martin Biddle will speak in St Bartholomew's Church in Hyde on Thursday, October the 23rd. Organised by Hyde 900, the annual King Alfred Lecture provides an opportunity to put the spotlight on Winchester's medieval heritage. In his talk, Canute, Emma and Hartha Canute, Danish Royal Burial in Winchester Cathedral, Professor Biddle will discuss the circumstances of the death and burial of King Canute and his family members. Professor Biddle, whose photograph heads this letter, is especially interested in why Canute decided to be buried in the Old Minster rather than the New Minster, the forebear of Hyde Abbey, of which he was a patron. This question also forms the basis of his contribution to a major three-volume study, Danish Royal Burials, Dansk Konge Grave, which will be launched shortly in Copenhagen. Demand for tickets is expected to be high, and it is advisable to book in advance. Tickets are £7, doors open and drinks served from 7 p.m, and the lecture starts at 7:30.
Have you ever thought about writing a book? Then a lecture at the Hampshire Record Office could help realise your dream. Down the centuries, there have been many well-known authors with connections to Hampshire. Perhaps the writer most closely associated with the county is Jane Austen, who spent most of her life in Hampshire. And it was here that she found inspiration to write such classics as Pride and Prejudice, Emma, Mansfield Park and Sense and Sensibility. Drawing on her large circle of friends, social gatherings and the local places she visited to devise the characters and settings for her novels. There are numerous other examples of Hampshire literary connections. Charles Dickens was born at 1 Mile End Terrace, Lamport, Portsmouth, where his father was working as a naval clerk. Anthony Trollope was educated at Winchester College and his parents were married in Heckfield Church. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle set up in medical practice in Southsea, living at Bush Villas, Elm Grove, where he wrote the first Sherlock Holmes story, A Study in Scarlet. He was also a founding member of Portsmouth Football Club, captain of Portsmouth Cricket Club, and secretary at Portsmouth Literary and Scientific Society. John Keats finished his poem, The Eve of St. Agnes, at the Old Mill House, Old Bedhampton. It is also where he spent his last night on British soil. Other authors have used Hampshire settings for their books, from Captain Marryat, Children of the New Forest, to John Christopher, Prince in Waiting, set in Winchester. Many others have visited the county to give an example of a place The poets Alexander Pope, Thomas Gray and William Lyle Bowles all visited Netley Abbey near Southampton Water. Lewis Carroll may be closely linked with Oxford, but it is in Lyndhurst that the grave of the real Alice Liddell is to be found. So Hampshire has a rich literary heritage for us all to enjoy. But have you ever dreamed of contributing to it yourself? On Wednesday, November the 5th, 2014, between 2 and 3.30, at Hampshire Record Office, home of Hampshire County Council's Archives and Local Study Service, Dr. Alison Baverstock, a former publisher who is now course leader for MA Publishing at Kingston University, will explain how to self-publish your book. After her successful lecture last year, which asked, "Do you have a book in you?" Dr. Baverstock returns by popular demand to build on the ideas she shared about how to get published, but this time concentrating on the options that exist for self-publishing. She will talk about what is going on in the marketplace and the stages you need to consider in order to make a success of your self-publishing. Whether you are aiming for an audience of thousands in order to impress potential publishers that your concept is viable, or just future generations of your family, whenever they decide they are mature enough to want to know what you have to tell them. To book a place at this fascinating talk, send a cheque for £8, payable to Hampshire County Council.
Invite to King's Remembrance Day. A Winchester school is inviting former pupils who served in the military to mark a World War I centenary ceremony on Remembrance Day. King's School is asking veterans who attended its predecessors to join the Old Boys of St Thomas's School, who mark the traditional ceremony every year. St Thomas's was the forerunner to Montgomery of Alamein School, which merged with the Danemark School to form King's in 1985. Its old boys will attend the World War I centenary ceremony in military dress and lay a wreath containing names of fellow pupils. A group of King's pupils will read from diaries they wrote during a visit to the World War I battlefields, before a 2-minute silence at 11 a.m. Pupils will have the chance to meet war veterans at an intimate reception. The school is inviting veteran alumni of Danemark, Montgomery and King's to attend the centenary ceremony on November the 11th. Organiser Jeff Lucas said, "We are very keen to involve these former pupils, as sadly but inevitably, the numbers of old boys from the St Thomas School who are able to attend has dramatically declined."
Alex's cafe design, perfectly realistic, says the headlines. A railway carriage could return to the old Hockley Viaduct as a cafe for cyclists designed by a teenager. Alex Grice, who is 16 years old, of Woodfield Drive, designed the cycle cafe for the railway bridge near Garnier Road during classes with Young Architects Project Spud Youth. The cafe could be used as a social hub for local bike clubs, offering hires, repairs, food and drink, and a place to relax along the route. Pit stop designs like Alex's could boost tourism in Winchester and get more people on their bikes, an impressed town forum heard last week. Councillor Chris Pine said, "We were blown out of the water by some of the designs. They were absolutely fabulous. Your railway carriage, oh, it's going to happen." Alex even found a £2,000 buffet car for sale on eBay in a bid to convince councillors that they could keep costs down. Eloise Appleby, Assistant Director of Economic Prosperity, said the Spud pupils' designs were perfectly realistic and may be combined to build a cycle cafe. "They're a fantastic organisation to work with," she said. "They're really creative, practical and very good at delivering what they're coming up with." She will meet with SPUD Youth Director Mark Drury next week to discuss the next step in setting up a cycle cafe. Former King's School pupil Alex said it would be incredibly exciting to see his design become a reality. He said it would be really awesome to see an idea come to life and get a real taste of what the world of architecture was like. Mark Drury of SPUD Youth said aspiring architects like Alex would gain useful experience from working on real designs with local authorities. He said, imagine at 16 years old to go, wow, something built that I instigated and drew the initial designs for. To take that on in his portfolio for uni applications and stuff is just phenomenal.
The photo with this article is of Lord Julian Fellowes with his honorary doctorate, and he's looking very grand in his robe and mortarboard. Oscar winner Scoops doctorate. He is the Oscar winner who created the hit TV series The Nation Has Fallen in Love With, and now he has scooped an honorary degree from the University of Winchester. Lord Julian Fellowes took centre stage at the ceremony for Faculty of Humanities and Social Sciences graduates at the Cathedral on Tuesday. The Downton Abbey creator was made an honorary Doctor of Letters and told the 1,000-strong audience to follow their dreams when it comes to choosing a career. He said, "When the lucky break comes, it may well come in disguise. It may not be what you were expecting, and it may not be what you were aiming at. But I would beg you, when the door opens, please go through it. I feel very lucky to be here today and very grateful to all you for coming to see me honoured." He was among the first of 1,800 people to receive doctorates and degrees throughout this week, with ceremonies taking place until tomorrow. After the ceremony, he said he felt honoured and flattered. "My son went to Winchester, and so we spent a lot of time here, so I'm not coming to a foreign country at all. And I think it is one of the most beautiful cities we have, one of the most historic, and to be honoured by the University of Winchester feels rather fabulous, to be honest. I consider myself a lucky boy," he said. Also among those being honoured was nun Kathleen Lyons, who at 92 is the university's oldest recipient of a Doctor of Philosophy. She decided to take up research as a retirement project in her late 80s. After encouragement from Professor Lisa Isherwood, the university's director of the Institute of Theological Partnerships. As scores of proud parents and family members joined the sea of purple and silver robes outside the cathedral, the African drumming ensemble from the university's foundation music course played loud and proud. Graduation week kicked off with a special procession from Abbey House through the city centre to the cathedral, including the university's Chancellor, Dame Mary Fagan. Honorary doctorates are also being awarded this week to social work expert Jennifer Bernard and Reverend Lucy Winkett. Honorary fellowships are being awarded to sustainability champion Mark Diacono, Winchester City Councillor Frank Pearson, volunteer John Shannon, reading advocate Nikki Gamble, and visual artist Tom Yendel. The winner of the Alumnus of the Year award is Hazel Forsyth, history and English graduate, for her achievement as senior curator of the medieval and post-medieval collections at the Museum of London.
Stolen clock returned home after 5 years. Hampshire Steam Railway had given up hope of ever seeing a historic clock 5 years after it was stolen in Alsford. So the Alsford-based Mid-Hants Railway was delighted last Friday when the police returned the timepiece valued at £1,000. It was bought by an enthusiast at an antiques fair in Surrey, who later realised it had been stolen in 2009 and handed it in to the police. The clock is thought to have initially turned up at a car boot sale in Surrey. But all railway clocks have a unique serial number, which made it easy for its rightful owners to be traced. The John Walker Southern Railway clock was taken from the booking hall at Alsford Station in March 2009. It had originally been donated in memory of a long-serving volunteer, Les Jones. Managing Director Colin Chambers said, "I'm surprised someone stole it, because there's nothing they can do with it. They're so easy to identify. But we are delighted to have it back." Mr. Chambers said he had the nice job of telling the Jones family that the memorial to Les had been returned. The clock will be checked over before being remounted in the booking hall. In 2009, the railway offered a one-day footplate course to anyone helping with the clock's return. "The offer is still open," said Mr. Chambers. He said it was the second happy ending to a crime. The case of a smashed window several years ago has been solved after a man was arrested in London. His DNA matched blood at the scene. And the railway recently received a cheque for £100. The Mid-Hants Railway runs from Alsford to Alton and reopened in the late 1970s after closure in 1973. It attracts some 125,000 visitors a year. It has 140 volunteers, employs 50 staff, including 8 engineering apprentices. And there is an accompanying photograph of Alsford platform with volunteer signalman Tony Story standing holding the clock.
Rents on new homes could be unaffordable. Ex-pub site Homes agreed, but concerns raised. Concerns have been raised that rents for new homes in Stanmore will be unaffordable to the people who need them most. New tenants could pay £128 a week for a one-bedroom flat at the former site of the new Queen's Head pub, a quite scary proposition, according to a ward councillor. A three-bedroomed house would cost £210 a week. The concern comes after civic chiefs agreed a £2.5 million deal to build on the site of Stanmore's last pub. The City Council's Cabinet Housing Committee last week agreed the contract with Drew Smith Limited to build 21 homes on the site. Rent for new affordable homes is capped at 80% of market value. But high property values in Winchester mean that this may still be out of reach for some tenants. Stanmore Councillor Jamie Scott welcomed the deal but suggested that local families, who the homes are designed for, may not be able to afford the rent. "It's really exciting to see that the City Council is building again in Stanmore after many years," he said. "This scheme has got a 100% lettings policy to people local to Stanmore, but I look at those figures and it's quite a scary figure." Councillor Janet Berry said, "They're not what I would term council houses because this is certainly not council housing rent. Oxford and Winchester are the first and second least affordable places to live in the United Kingdom." An informal policy group will meet in the next few weeks to discuss rents on new social housing. Judith Stevenson Baker, chairman of Tenants and Council Together, also raised concerns over affordability and the timber frames to be used in the new homes. She said, "I'm a council tenant. This is my rent you're talking about. We don't want wooden sheds at exorbitant rents. You're supposed to be looking for rents at up to 80%. She later accepted assurances that the homes would use wooden frames to save energy and quality would not be compromised. Andrew Palmer, head of New Homes Delivery, said developers would use bricks on outer layers and the houses would look like any other.
Naked Rambler jailed. The Naked Rambler has been jailed for 2.5 years for once more breaching a court order preventing him from appearing unclothed in public. Stephen Gough's long-held personal crusade is that he is entitled to walk the streets without clothing. But bystanders have routinely complained to the police about his appearances, and the judiciary system has now convicted him 30 times in the past 11 years. A jury last week at Winchester Crown Court returned a unanimous guilty verdict in a matter of minutes on one charge of breaching an indefinite social, antisocial behaviour order imposed by Southampton Magistrates Court last year. This bans him from appearing naked in public, unless it is in public changing rooms for a medical examination or on a nudist beach. Senior Crown Advocate Simon Jones, prosecuting, told how when Gough was released from Winchester Prison on April the 15th this year, he walked onto the busy Romsey Road naked except for socks and boots. Former lorry driver Gough, 55, who used to live in Eastleigh, did not have any legal representation and made brief naked appearances in the dock.
Philip is in tune for a high-flying career. A church organist who spent 5 years at Winchester Cathedral will soon swap pipes for planes as he embarks on a new career as a commercial airline pilot. Philip White Jones was assistant organist at Winchester Cathedral from 2003 to 2008 and taught the instrument at St Swithin's School in the city. But after completing a British Airways flight training course, he is now licensed to fly short-haul aircraft as far as Cyprus. The 33-year-old said he always saw his professional future in music, but his lifelong passion for flying eventually took over after a gift from his parents. He said, "The flight was usually the best bit of the holiday for me. On my 30th birthday, my parents bought me flying lessons and I got bitten by the bug." The organist trained for 2 years on BA's Future Pilot programme, which coaches aspiring pilots with no experience. He spent over a year in Dibden and New Zealand using cutting-edge simulators to hone his skills before his first passenger flight in July. He said taking control of the plane from London Gatwick to Venice was a great feeling. "You're so focused on what you're doing," he said. "It's very complicated. I found myself just going through all the drills and procedures I'd learnt. It's only when you take a step back and take a look at the plane, you think, blimey, I just flew that." Pilots and organists are not so different, he said, because both have to focus during long periods of inactivity before springing into action. "It's all about focus and managing your workload," he said. In terms of playing a really important service in Winchester Cathedral, you've got a really complicated piece and then nothing for a long time. It's a lot like the critical environment of the cockpit. There are similarities in terms of workload and concentration. He added that intensive training has held him back from musical pursuits since 2012, but the jet-setting lifestyle will allow him to plan his time and perform services more often. And there is a photograph of Philip sitting beside an organ wearing his pilot's uniform and looking very pleased.
Hospital staff join strike action. Health workers at Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital went on strike on Monday as part of a national dispute over pay. Nurses, midwives and support staff walked out in protest over the government's below inflation pay increase of 1%. A Hampshire Hospitals Trust spokesman said there was minimal impact on services. Unison, Unite and GMB unions are leading the industrial action, claiming staff walked out with heavy hearts. The four-hour strike launched a week of action, with staff refusing to work overtime from Tuesday to Friday. It was the first time on the picket line for many staff, including members of the Royal College of Midwives, who went on strike for the first time in their history. Midwife Lisa Burkett, who's 41, said, "I don't do it lightly. I'd never put mothers or babies at risk. I love my job. I just think sometimes it's taken for granted that because we work so hard, we won't strike, and therefore we would have to sit back and accept having no pay rise.
8-year-old cyclist off like Chris Froome. A Winchester boy is the youngest to compete in a 109-kilometre cycle ride through the New Forest. Sam Edmonds, age 8, polished off the Gridiron Road cycling event last Sunday without getting off to rest once. Sam is a member of VCV, a Velo Club Venta, a Winchester cycling group, and is also a pupil at Harestock Primary School. He completed the 69-mile ride with his dad, also Sam. Sam Jr. said, "It wasn't too difficult. We stopped at the 2 feed station checkpoints and I had lots of biscuits and pasta. I love cycling and the atmosphere when I cross the finish line. I really like riding with Daddy. We go really fast downhill and have races and sometimes I beat him uphill." Earlier this year, Sam Jr. of Priors Dean Road won the Winchester Criterium Under 8s Boys Race. Sam Sr. said, "Towards the end, during the last 15 miles and some of the bigger hills, I genuinely had to work really hard to keep up with Sam, who just stood up on his pedals and was off like Chris Froome. He's a brilliant climber with excellent endurance. I'm so proud, and it was the best day's riding I've ever had." And there's a lovely photo with this article of the two Sams, Sam Sr. and Sam Jr., looking absolutely delighted.
Yes, and I have a photograph too of Captain Anthony Shallow and Cadet Company Sergeant Major Jessica Cookson, and they're standing wearing their uniforms and proudly showing their awards that they've just been given. Two members of the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Army Cadet Force have been recognised at a special ceremony at Winchester Guildhall. Captain Anthony Shallow and Cadet Company Sergeant Major Jessica Cookson, both of Zulu Company, were presented with awards by the new Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson. Company Sergeant Major Jessica Cookson, a Peter Simmons College student, was appointed as the Lord Lieutenant's Cadet, which includes a distinctive badge worn to denote her role. She will now assist the Lord Lieutenant, often on royal visits, to act as an ambassador for their organisation. She said, "I'm very proud to have been appointed as the Lord Lieutenant's cadet. I'm looking forward to this new appointment." Captain Shallow from Andover was recognised for his dedication, hard work and commitment to the cadet force and was awarded the Meritorious Award, which is presented to members of both the reserves and the cadet force.
Long-awaited medals for Arctic Convoy veterans. It was described by Winston Churchill as the worst journey in the world. Thousands of British men braved unforgiving terrains, sub-zero conditions, threat of attack and severe storms in the Arctic to deliver crucial supplies to the Soviet Union during the Second World War. Many Allied seamen lost their lives over the course of the campaign, prompting the former Prime Minister to utter the famous words. "Now, after years of campaigning, the courage shown by veterans of the Arctic Convoy mission has finally been recognised as Russia presented them with the Ushakov Medal. Veterans from across the South were honoured at a ceremony held at the Mayor's Parlour in the Civic Centre in Southampton. They were presented the medals by Naval Attaché Captain Oleg Konienko, who paid tribute to the courage they showed in conflict. Russia was previously prevented from honouring the veterans by the Foreign Office, as it went against rules on foreign medals. The Arctic Star was created by the British government in 2012 after a long campaign for recognition by veterans. But campaigners stressed that the veteran should still receive the Ushakov Medal, which is awarded to sailors who have displayed courage in defending Russia or its interests. Medals awarded to those who have passed away were collected by family members on their behalf. Among those at the ceremony was John Kilford, who is 90 years old, from Otterbourne, who was an able seaman in the Arctic convoys and attended with his family. He was part of the second escort crew during the four-year mission and sailed on the Wren. He fondly recalls Captain F.J. Walker, who led the six sloops of the Black Swan class, of which Wren was a part. He said, "I'm really pleased to have received this medal. It's great to be around everyone again. I've already met up with one of my shipmates here too. This is a Russian medal, and it is a privilege. The English medal was posted through my letterbox. It is nice to have this recognition, and I'm pleased to be here. There are not many of us left." Captain Konienko said, "It's a huge privilege for me to thank you on behalf of the Russian government for your contributions. Your courage will always be remembered." The Chronicle revealed a fortnight ago that George York from Shawford received a second medal in 2 years for his actions on the Arctic convoys. The 91-year-old who is pictured here, who was aboard HMS Cumberland, was last year commended with the Arctic Star, but was also awarded the Ushakov Medal. Mr. York's wife, Josephine, collected the medal at a special service in London.
Saffron's Trek in memory of friend Holly. With a walking stick at her side and trekking boots on, a Winchester University student is getting ready to take part in a mammoth charity walk in memory of her late family friend. Saffron Hull, 18, a first-year English literature student at the University of Winchester, is set to walk 23.5 miles from Anne's Hill Cemetery in Gosport to Winchester on January the 11th in memory of 12-year-old Holly Sparshot, whom she used to babysit. Holly passed away at Naomi House on October the 24th last year after suffering a severe asthma attack. Miss Hill said she would always remember Holly, whom she grew close to while babysitting her, and Emily, Holly's sister. "I used to look after her if her mum ever needed to go out, and I used to be quite close to her," she said. "We became good friends." Now Miss Hull, who is being supported by her mum, Kim Hampton, and her 15-year-old sister Serena, hopes to raise £500 for Naomi House and Jack's Place, where Holly spent her final moments in the butterfly suite. Holly's mum had to go through this, and Naomi House was a massive support for her, Saffron added. "Even after her death, they made sure there was support in place for her, and they made her departure go as smoothly as they could for her. This is my way of saying thank you." And there are two photos with this article. One is of Saffron Hull, dressed in black leggings and a Naomi House t-shirt, ready for her walk, and an inset of Holly Sparshot, who sadly died.
Singing Project has health benefits. A singing project that aims to enhance health and well-being amongst elderly people in Winchester is soon to start its third session. The Singing for Wellbeing project, which is run by the Winchester Live at Home scheme and the University of Winchester, launched its first class a year ago. Now demand has proved so popular that a third session was introduced on Monday, September the 22nd, from 11 in the morning and runs for an hour and a half. Claire Morgan, manager of Winchester at Home, said, "The session's aim is to enhance health and a sense of well-being through music and song, making the group particularly important for those with memory loss or other long-term health issues. The repertoire is chosen from a wide range of resources and designed to be accessible and fun for all. Carers and partners are also invited to attend. For more information, contact the Winchester Live at Home service on 01962 890995.
Hune to appeal paying legal bill. Disgraced ex-Eastleigh MP Chris Hune is set to appeal against his £77,750 legal bill in a move that could cost taxpayers thousands of pounds. The former cabinet minister, who is pictured here, was ordered to pay the costs after being prosecuted for passing speeding points to his ex-wife, Vicky Price. She and Hune, who's 60 years old, were jailed after he admitted asking her to take points so he could avoid a driving ban. Hune, who is now European chairman of Zilka Biomass Energy, offered to pay £25,000, but this was rejected because he had denied the charge of perverting the course of justice, which prolonged the court proceedings. Mr. Hune said he would not comment on the matter before the hearing at the Royal Courts of Justice in London on October the 28th. Daya Chakravarti of the Taxpayers Alliance said residents would be annoyed by the possibility of footing the bill. Hune was forced to resign from his post as Energy and Climate Change Cabinet Secretary after being charged with perverting the course of justice, later quitting as a Liberal Democrat MP.
Support worker wins Army Award. A Winchester support worker has won a national award for the guidance she gives children from armed forces families. Celia Bailey, a service family support worker at Harestock Primary School, has been awarded the Excellence for Forces Children Award by the Army Families Federation. The school has around 50 pupils from Forces families, and head teacher Jackie Sankey says Mrs. Bailey's work is essential. Some of these service children attend 3, 4 or even more schools, she says. Celia makes sure they are welcomed and settle into classroom routines quickly, which is very important to ensure the children can make as much progress as possible and enjoy their time with us. For the past 4 years, the school has received a Ministry of Defence grant to fund her work. The mother of three, whose husband is in the army, was nominated for the award by parents. She said, "I was extremely proud to receive this award. I am privileged to work with the service children who arrive at Harestock from all over the country and help them with the issues that can arise with moving schools mid-term. I look forward to continuing and growing the role here to ensure that the Harestock experience for our service children will be one that they take forward with them and remember fondly."
History comes to life for primary pupils. A Wickham school has turned back time to the Saxon age by ploughing crops into the playing field. Year 4 pupils at Wickham C of E Primary School watched a pair of heavy horses plough, sow and harrow a winter wheat crop into the field. The crop will be grown using the methods of the Saxon Mianwara, who occupied the Wickham area more than 1,000 years ago. Head teacher Maria Ackland said, "This is a new and exciting historical inquiry project. Our children will use and learn from traditional methods at every stage." And there's a lovely photograph of the head teacher Maria Ackland, the farmer Mr. Ross, and two heavy horses, Felicity and Gurgeon, with a group of smiling children.
This piece is headed with a photograph of a loving couple kissing, and it's headed, "Blind Date Led to 50 Years of Marriage." South Wanston couple Ken and Barbara Nash marked their golden wedding with a party for family and friends at the home they've lived in for 39 years. The pair kicked off the evening's dancing with First Waltz and then talked long into the night, only getting to bed at 4 a.m. Barbara, who is 68, said the event was also special because it was the first time they met their only great-granddaughter, 5-month-old Maria Rose. We had lots of presents and lots of cards, said the nursing auxiliary. Barbara and 81-year-old Ken, who used to work in the motoring industry, met on a blind date set up by friends and were married in Andover. They have two children, Chris and Clifford, and five grandchildren. The marriage is never perfect, she confided. There has to be give and take.
Christmas comes early for school. Christmas has come early for pupils in Bishop's Waltham as they start work on their festive play 3 months in advance. More than 100 children at Bishop's Waltham Junior School have been rehearsing for their production of Scrooge since mid-September. The ambitious production features hand-stitched costumes by teaching assistant Rachel MacDonald and bespoke sets by local artist Simi Wish. Year 6 pupils will take on the challenging acting roles, with younger children supporting with dance and song for the performance on December the 9th.
That concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editor, Tom Williams. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Michael Wyard.
Goodbye.
Maria Head.
Bye.
And Deborah Cranmer.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams. Goodbye. And do have a good week. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label inside, please make sure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet as well. Thank you.